I'm certainly ready.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order. Just to kind of go over the agenda, we are a little bit in flux here. We are going to carry over the public hearing on Senate Bill 1013. Is that right? And then we are going to start out our meeting today with legislative testimony on Senate Bill 825 and Senate Bill, or House Bill 2927. And then after we take the legislative members hearing, we're going to do two quick work sessions, and then we will carry over HCR 23, which I'll do right now. And then after we do our two quick work sessions, we'll get into the public hearing. And we will have time limits on the testimony so that nobody who wants to testify gets left out, because we will have a limited time. So welcome, everyone. I will start out by opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 825 and House Bill 2927. Cherie.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 825 enacts Oregon's participation in the Interstate Compact to elect the President of the United States by national popular vote and refers the measure to the ballot for a statewide special election occurring on the same day as the next primary election. Similarly, House Bill 2927 enacts Oregon's participation in the Interstate Compact to elect the President of the United States by national popular vote.
Okay, we'll start out with Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Senator Richard Devlin, Senate District 19. I am going to keep my testimony relatively short.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
But I would just like to put some things on the record. First of all, I would like to put on the record that I have asked when there will be a hearing on the national popular vote. I have not asked for a hearing on SB 825, but I do want to tell you why I introduced SB 825. I clearly believe in one person, one vote. I believe in the reality that a constitutional measure may never be referred to the states to determine whether or not the president is elected by the popular vote. I clearly recognize that the national popular vote is the only vehicle achievable to get one person, one vote at this time. I'm also quite aware of the history of the discussion in the Senate of the national popular vote. And one of the reasons I introduced it was my understanding of that history and knowledge of where people were, and the reality that I understood that to actually pass this, it probably would have to be a referral, at least at the time that I had the bill crafted. That would enable the bill actually to be acted upon. Again, I have a strong belief in representative democracy also, and that's been questioned because many people have said, well, why don't you just enact this? There are some issues that I believe rise to the level where I do believe it's important that the public is consulted. No other issue is more at the core of our democracy than the right to vote and knowing how your vote is going to be counted. I have been somewhat disappointed in the discourse in this particular debate currently. If you go back to the discussions of the national popular vote, as far as I go back, I can remember meeting with some of the advocates as early as about 2009. And then, although we had had the issue in a previous election where someone had the national popular vote in modern history and actually lost in the electoral vote, the discussion there was centered upon the issue that there have been measures in California to apportion the electoral votes in California. And if California ever passed a measure to apportion the votes, it would be more difficult for a Democrat to be elected president. However, since 2016, and with all great deference to my colleague, Senator Farioli, the level of this discussion, the height of this discussion, The nature of this discussion has changed dramatically, both, I think, in a reaction to who was elected and to how they were elected, and particularly given the very wide margin in terms of popular vote in this. So I think that has heightened the discussion of this issue. I have been disappointed in the tone of the emails that I and others have received, and have been particularly disappointed in the attacks on the Senate President in those emails. I don't believe anyone else in this body, in the House or the Senate, probably deserves more respect for their actual dedication to this state and for their dedication to democratic principles. And I do believe that when somebody has strongly held views, there is a way to discuss those without disparaging their intentions. And that has very much disappointed me. But my profound disappointment has been statements and emails that, to paraphrase some of them, we don't have the time, resources, or will to mount a campaign in support of a referral. I will tell you quite honestly, when in a democracy, citizens say they do not have the time, resources, or will to fight for what they believe in is right, we have a lot more problems in the democracy than what we're debating here today. Again, I want to close by saying I did not ask for this hearing on SB 825. I am not asking for a work session on SB 825. I believe in one person, one vote. I believe the president should be elected by a popular vote. I believe it is best that the public be consulted before there is a change in how their vote is going to be counted for president. However, if this committee and this body decides differently, I would ask that we include in future voters' pamphlets beginning in 2020 during that presidential cycle a very clear statement, very visible to the voters, that we are part of the compact for the national popular vote, that we have voted to be part of that compact, and a very clear statement of whether that compact is in effect. Because whether it's in effect or not will affect how the people's votes are being counted. So I believe if we are going to enact this rather than to refer it, at a minimum, we need to put in those voters' pamphlets that we are part of the compact and whether it is actually in force or not. That's the only way Oregonians will know how their vote will be counted in the general election in 2020, even given the fact, and I didn't want to digress into this, but this measure has so far only passed in states in both chambers that both are in Democratic control. And with all due deference to everyone here, we recognize that we are a relatively unique state and that out of the 50 states, there are only 14 where both chambers are in Democratic control.
Okay, questions from the committee?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
Senator Devlin, of all of the members, I think you probably have one of the better grasps of history. And certainly you can articulate why the Founding Fathers insisted on a representative form of government, a representative vote as expressed by the Electoral College to select the president. Could you put that on the record, please?
Well, I believe, and my memory of this may be different than yours, Senator Farioli and Madam Chair, but I believe it was a concern about that certain states, because they would be so outnumbered by the population of other states and the representation of those states, that their voice would not be heard. That it was necessary to do it this way so that states had a role in it, even if they were a smaller state. I do believe, though, that time has changed. And I do believe, because of not just historical circumstances, but the two most recent circumstances, that I think the public, all the polls I've seen, is that the public is overwhelmingly in favor of a national popular vote. But I will tell you, actually, some of the rhetoric about a national popular vote, I wasn't going to get into this, but you gave me an opening. I don't think it's true. And I know how you try to sell something to the public, but I do think they strongly believe in a national popular vote. They strongly believe in one person, one vote. But I will tell you, in my time in Oregon, I have seen many presidential candidates come to this state. They sometimes, more recently, don't come in the general election because we are such a blue state. And to be quite honest, even with a national popular vote, we all know what has happened to elections now how much research goes into elections, how much identification of voters goes into elections, how many focus groups there are, how many polls there are. I don't believe, and given what the real time frames are, that anybody's going to see presidential candidates running through every state, because there just simply isn't the time anymore to do that, and it's not a very effective way to campaign anymore. That's regrettable, because I think both of us go back to the days. Well, there was one. The last one I saw, a candidate I assigned that was on a train, and it was kind of an actual. It was Robert F. Kennedy. Oh. But it was kind of a demonstration that it could still be done, and that was in 1968. And tragically, unfortunately, only a few weeks later, Robert F. Kennedy was assassinated directly after he lost, or after he won the California primary.
Madam Chair, if I might respond.
Please do.
I agree with the first sentence, which was that the framers of the Constitution were terrified that more populous states would overshadow lesser populated states in terms of national elections, and therefore they created the Electoral College. And I agree with the second statement that you made, which is times have changed, or things have changed. I'll just point out that this is the current electoral map of the U.S. The red counties obviously represent Republican-dominated counties, and the blue, Democrat-dominated counties. The thing that's changed is that we've had through the sweep of history, the Industrial Revolution, the decline of agrarian community economic base, and a consolidation of population into coastal cities. We now have a situation where a few coastal cities can, in fact, dominate the mass of the states that are not coastal. And what we have is a blue state, red state dichotomy. The Electoral College is as important as it's ever been to keep states with low populations from being completely overwhelmed by cities that have large populations. So I would argue, rightly, that the Electoral College is now more important than it's ever been. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Other comments, questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we will take, I see three legislators here who want to testify. I see Senator Steiner Hayward, Representative Kenny Geyer, and Representative Solomon. Senator Dembro, were you here for this? You want to wait? Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate District 17. And with respect, my colleagues have agreed to let me go first because I have a meeting with the governor at 1:30. So, and I'm here to testify today in support of House Bill 2927. I appreciate very much Senator Devlin's testimony. I just want to outline really quickly the core components of this bill. And this bill has been enacted in 11 states, 11 jurisdictions, including four small ones, four medium ones, three medium ones, and three large ones. And those ones have 165 electoral votes. We need to get to 270 before this will take effect. So we're still 105 short, of which Oregon would be 7, although my guess is that after the next redistricting will be 8. And it's passed, actually, 34 legislative chambers in 23 states, a bipartisan 40-16 vote in the Republican Arizona House, 28-18 in the Republican Oklahoma Senate, 57-4 in the Republican New York Senate, which is one of the states, by the way, that passed it. So I would beg to differ with Senator Devlin. So that was not a democratically controlled legislature. And it's passed in the Oregon House in the past, and almost 3,000 state legislators have already voted in support of this bill. I'm going to be very brief because you'll hear more detail from others after me, but I want to point out one important thing. There are a lot of comments that if Oregon adds to this, it takes this on, that our Republican voters, who are in the minority historically in this state, will be disenfranchised. I'd like to point out the 1988 and 2004 elections. In 1988, George H.W. Bush ran against Michael Dukakis. Michael Dukakis won the Oregon electoral vote by winning the popular vote in Oregon. However, George H.W. Bush won the national popular vote. Had this law been in effect at that time, Oregon's 7 electoral votes would have gone to soon-to-be President Bush, and thus actually helping our Republicans have their vote count in a way that it really didn't in the national election. That same case was true in 2004 when Oregon voted for John Kerry for president, but then-President George W. Bush won the national popular vote. Again, Oregon's 7 electoral votes went to Senator Kerry when, in fact, the national popular vote would have given them to President Bush. While I supported both candidate Dukakis and candidate Kerry, I think it would have been appropriate for Oregon's votes at that time to go to the winner of the national popular vote, even if it had not been my candidate of choice. So I want to be clear that I am not supporting this as a Democrat. I am supporting this as a person who believes that every person's vote should count, and that matters regardless of your party. And so I would urge your support of this bill. Happy to take a question if you'd like, and then I'm going to have to boogie.
Okay, let's ask her a question if we have one. We don't.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your understanding, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair Burdick, and Co-Chair, or Vice Chair, Senator Ferrioli, members of the committee. I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, Southeast and Northeast Portland, here in support of House Bill 2927. Our country's electoral college system of electing our president and vice president is flawed and outdated, and it is time to replace it with the national popular vote. In 1789, our forefathers assumed voters could not learn about candidates outside of their region due to limited communication. Thus, they felt they needed representation to cast those votes. Much has changed since then, and every political position, many of which used to be elected by state legislatures, like senators, is now elected with a majority of popular vote, except for our president and vice president. The shortcomings of the current system of electing the president stem from the state winner-take-all laws. That is, state laws that award all of the state's electoral votes to the presidential candidate who receives the most popular votes in each separate state. Because of the winner-take-all rule, a candidate can win the presidency without winning the most popular votes nationwide. 5 of the nation's 45 presidents have come into office without winning the most popular votes nationwide. The Electoral College does not fit the we the people and one person, one vote style of government. Oregon's votes don't count as much in a presidential election as swing states. In fact, they really don't count at all. In 2016, candidates concentrated over two-thirds of their campaign visits and ad money in just 6 closely divided battleground states, Ohio, Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. And 94% in just 12 states. No presidential candidate has come to Oregon to campaign during the last election season and in the last several cycles. Your vote and my vote in Oregon doesn't matter to presidential candidates because they have no reason to solicit votes in states such as Oregon, where the statewide outcome for a president is a foregone conclusion. Republican presidential candidates write Oregon off, and Democratic candidates take Oregon for granted, so we are relegated to being a spectator state. Post-election implications of our current system are equally important. Battleground states receive 7% more federal grants than spectator states, twice as many presidential disaster declarations, waivers and exemptions, as in No Child Left Behind. While there is a lot of attention on the recent Democratic candidates who won the popular vote but lost the Electoral College, it can also go the other way. Senator Steiner Hayward talked about how Oregon votes went, and I want to just mention nationwide. In 2004, a shift of less than 60,000 votes in Ohio would have defeated President Bush, despite his nationwide lead over 3 million votes. In 2012, a shift of 214,000 votes would have elected Mitt Romney, despite President Obama's nationwide lead of almost 5 million votes. For all of these reasons, I'm honored to co-chief sponsor House Bill 2927 with several people, including Senator Boquist, and I appreciate the many current and former Republicans who have sponsored, co-sponsored, and have voted for this legislation in the 3 previous sessions. I think that's it for now, but I'm also happy to answer any questions.
I think we'll wait till Representative.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Senator Ferrioli, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Janine Salmon. I am the state representative from House District 30, which encompasses Banks, North Plains, Hillsborough, and Beaverton. My comments today are going to be brief, but I thought it was important for me to take a moment to express my support on such an important bill. House Bill 2927 is a good piece of policy that will help ensure that each person in this country has a voice in their elections. In two of the last six presidential elections, the president who actually went on to become president actually lost the popular vote, in some cases by millions of votes. This, in turn, has discouraged a lot of people in their political system, and we've had a low voter turnout as a result. The voice of our young adults has been growing increasingly void in our voting process, and it is our duty to bring those who have been traditionally left out of the process into the conversation so that we have the best possible representation in our community, in public offices, from every corner of the state. By streamlining this process and ensuring that one voice equals one vote, we will be encouraging disenfranchised voters who feel like their voice isn't being heard get back into the political arena and vote. We need to have every vote in Oregon be counted before our polls close. We need the West Coast to be counted in this election. The bill is about ensuring proper representation of the highest level of office that one can hold in this country. I hope that you'll join me, my colleagues, my colleague besides me, and in 11 other states across this country, and support this key piece of legislation. And I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Questions for this panel?
Question.
Senator Ferrioli.
Esteemed colleagues, could we take this principle and bring it home and repeal the winner-take-all provisions here in Oregon state government?
Winner-take-all for the electoral votes?
Well, I was just pointing out that
the winner take all.
The winner of the election cycles in Oregon elect the president.
To have a split.
Absolute control of every committee, every appointment. every committee. All of the appointments to those committees, wherever the bills go. I think that the session, the way it's rolling out, shows that perhaps domination by just one party can create terrible gridlock. So could we have an end to this winner-take-all tyranny here in Oregon?
National popular vote may be a good way to go in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's reaching. That is reaching. That's reaching.
You deserved it.
The other thing, Madam Chair, there is another question.
Excuse me,
there
sir.
Is another question.
Please.
So, colleagues, if we go to a system where just pure population is the only criteria, at 4 million, which is around 10% of the total population of the state, if Oregon has to compete on just a straight population basis for resources and all of the other decision-making that happens, do you think Oregon will be the standout state at 4 million? Or maybe we can muscle Idaho and Montana.
Thank you for the question. So actually, I think Oregon will benefit greatly by moving in this direction because right now we are written off completely. Mm-hmm. So things that we care about in this area, Pacific trade, seismic upgrades, things like that, just do not become a part of the presidential debate at all. So whether you're Democrat or Republican, and I want to reiterate what Senator Steiner Hayward said, I was very much for this bill in the last several cycles before the most recent election. And again, in 2000, the Democrat lost the Electoral College, even though he won the popular vote. But as I mentioned, in 2004, it could have very easily gone the other way had the national popular had 60,000 votes changed in Ohio. And so I really come at this from the principle of it. And I know that there's a lot of questions about small states versus large and rural versus urban. And you may have received a visit from a former state legislator from Orange County who had gotten up on the floor of the Senate in California and talked about some of these myths out there about small versus large, rural versus urban states, and how he realized after studying the issue, unfortunately he's no longer a legislator, that actually those were myths. And the nationalpopularvote.com website has some fabulous little video clips that go into what some of those myths are. So the point is, the candidates would have to go around and fight for every single vote equally, because one person in Oregon would be the same as one person in Florida. So I think Oregon has a lot to gain. I think we lose dramatically through this cycle, not only during the election cycle when our issues are not discussed in the campaign, but also afterwards when presidents are trying to hold on to their lead and they give a lot more benefits to the people in the swing states. And that has been proven on many different metrics.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Now we'll take, I'm going to do my best to, there are people who are signed up to testify for one and against the other, and some are for, I don't think we have any for both, but we have a couple against both. I'm going to try to be fair, so bear with me. Okay, we'll start out with Barry Fadum, Marge Easley, and Angelica Arcagrande.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Barry Fadum. I've had the privilege of serving as president of National Popular Vote, a nonprofit organization, since 2005. And I've had the opportunity to work on this bill in Oregon since 2009. I'm just going to quickly cover, in 2 minutes, I hope, the specific benefits to Oregon if Oregon were to join this compact. And the frame for my presentation is simple, in that the Founding Fathers gave you, the state legislators, the exclusive right to make the decision as to how to award electoral votes. So the question before you today is, what system of awarding electoral votes is in the best interest of Oregon citizens? On the positive side for national popular vote, there are five things I'm going to point out. On a national popular vote, we have a 50-state campaign that will emerge, because every vote in every state will count equally. So therefore, first benefit is that presidential candidates will actually come, and their surrogates will actually come and visit Oregon. You've heard the numbers before as to how many visits were conducted in only 12 states. Those visits are going to get spread out, so Oregon would actually see a presidential candidate during the general election. But perhaps more importantly, Oregon's going to see TV and radio ads, because in a 50-state campaign, both parties will be running TV and radio ads. And besides just the ads themselves, the fact that these television radio ads might even talk about issues important to voters in Oregon is a very attractive feature of the fact that a campaign for president would actually be run in Oregon. The third positive factor I'd like to cite is that currently, under the current system, the national parties pump in millions of dollars into the battleground states to support grassroots activities. Under national popular vote and a 50-state campaign, you're going to see money available for grassroots activities in all 50 states, which benefits, of course, both parties. Fourth positive factor is money raised in Oregon could actually stay in Oregon. The number I have is from 2012, but in 2012, $10.4 million was raised in the state of Oregon by both parties, and every dime of that exported out to the battleground states. Under national popular vote, money raised in Oregon could stay in Oregon to work on the presidential campaign. Fifth and last one, and I'll actually let you cover this, increased voter participation is really the positive factor that brings everything together. Can I do 30 seconds on 825?
We'll give you a little more because you came from quite a distance.
Oh, thank you for that.
But I'm going to crack the whip on everybody else.
I will take no more than 2 minutes because before I talk about 825, small states, I'm going to do it in 30 seconds. There are 13 small states today with four electoral votes or less. Six are red, six are blue. So there's one battleground small state, which is New Hampshire. So 12 out of the 13 small states in this country have not seen a presidential campaign in many, many years. And I just want to point out that on a national popular vote, the states of Hawaii, Vermont, Rhode Island, and the District of Columbia have enacted the national popular vote. These are four small states who understand that under the current system, they are the most punished states of all. And then the comment on SB 825, I can shorten because it sounds like it's not moving. All I would say is national popular vote strongly opposes referring it to the ballot for a simple reason. The founding fathers gave you, the state legislatures, the duty to make this decision. This decision has never been put on a ballot by any state legislature, ever. And this is not the time to start in Oregon. And thank you for giving me the extra time.
Thank you.
Hi, for the record, my name is Marge Easley, and I am here on behalf of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League has a long history in advocacy to correct the flaws in how we elect the president, going back nearly 50 years. So we are not Johnny-come-latelys in this issue. We strongly support HB 2927, and we strongly oppose SB 825. And I will talk about why we oppose it in just a second. First, I want to say, as far as Senator Ferrioli's comment about the population of cities in this country would overpower the votes of rural areas, that is not accurate. That the total, the 100 top cities in the U.S. is a tiny, tiny percentage of the total population of the U.S. And so it is not true at all that the city population of those top 100 cities would be the majority of the vote. And the when you get under the top 100, the population of those cities is quite small. The what I want to point out is that voters, knowing their votes don't matter, tune out, decide not to vote when they think the outcome of their state election is a foregone conclusion. They understand that their votes literally don't matter. And I can say this with certainty because my own daughter, who's 26, said, my vote doesn't matter. I'm not voting. And so if my own daughter doesn't vote, then I think that this is an idea that is pretty prevalent in a time when trust in government is at a low point. I am opposed to 825, and the League is opposed, because putting the national popular vote on the ballot would throw it into a highly charged arena of partisan politics today. And we believe that that is not where we want this issue to be. It is truly a nonpartisan issue. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Okay. My name is Angela Rocco Grandi. I live in Wilsonville. I'm here today to urge you to vote against Senate Bill 825. I support Oregon joining the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact through a yes vote on House Bill 2927. The Constitution is very clear about how states allocate their Electoral College votes. It says each state shall appoint in such a manner as the legislature thereof may direct. Nowhere in this article does it say the decision should be referred to voters, and the extent to which a decision made via this route would be upheld in a court challenge is unknown. Furthermore, Oregon's decision to use the current winner-take-all approach was not referred to voters, and there has never been a case in U.S. history where anybody other than the state legislature has made this decision. If the legislature thinks that only the voters can make these important decisions, there is no reason to have a legislature. It's not worth taxpayer money to have legislators only working to make decisions like whether to designate the third Saturday in March of each year as Cherry Blossom Day or whether Newburgh should be designated as the Camellia City of Oregon. We need you to make important decisions. Do the job you're elected to do or find a new job, or we will help you find a new job. Oregon's Constitution provides a specific way for opponents to obtain a statewide vote on legislation after it is passed by the legislature. Under this established referendum process, the opponents have the burden of getting a certain number of signatures against what the legislature passed within 90 days of it passing. The question then goes to the November general election ballot. The plan proposed by Senators Courtney and Devlin turns this upside down. The opponents don't have the usual burden of demonstrating substantial opposition to the legislation by getting a petition signed. I do not believe presidential candidates listen to the concerns of a particular state. They listen to the concerns of groups of individuals across the country, many of whom are expressing many of the same concerns, regardless of the state they live in. We have our members of Congress who effectively represent the needs of residents living in close geographic proximity and who often have similar concerns. These federal positions are state legislators, governors, mayors, school board members, and on are elected by the popular vote. The president should be too. Please support HB 2927.
Thank you. And I'll just remind the audience that we have an opportunity to submit written testimony for the record, and we'll keep this record open till Friday at 5 o'clock. So people, two minutes is a short time, but I want to make sure everybody gets heard.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
Sure. So a comment was made that cities won't dominate states and more populous states won't dominate less populous states. That would lead me to presume that Portland doesn't dominate Oregon, that Boise doesn't dominate Idaho politically, that Seattle doesn't dominate Washington, that Southern California doesn't dominate Northern California, and that Las Vegas doesn't dominate Nevada. When you, I presume those are self-evident, that they absolutely do, that the more populous areas certainly do dominate the less populous areas. Perhaps we can debate that offline.
Can I make a comment?
Sure, please.
I wanted to just say that that is on a state-by-state basis. We're talking about the entire country's population. And so it's quite different when you talk about the country as a whole.
Well, Madam Chair, that is, I don't mean to be argumentative. I can't help myself. The U.S. is an aggregate of the states, and if that paradigm is ubiquitous in the Intermountain West, it certainly will affect the votes cast in the Intermountain West. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would love to have, could he just say
offline, out in the hall?
Can I say one response? We already know how presidential campaigns would be conducted in states by what they do now. So when you look at any of the battleground states, you will see that every candidate campaigned in some of the big cities, but they went everywhere in the state. It is just not true that big cities by themselves can control the outcome of a campaign. I'm from California, and we're a blue state. And how many Republican governors have we had? 4 out of the last 6 governors have been red. Because if you win Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, that does not mean you're going to win the statewide vote. So that would be the examples I would offer up. And I'd love to take it offline as well.
Okay.
Can I just give one number two?
No, we're going to end this panel.
Thank
you very much. Okay. Now we will hear from Fred Walton, Ken Corum, and Elizabeth Danley? Elizabeth. We'll hear from Elizabeth.
Some of us at least have an offer of a new job during the last meeting.
Yeah, open pay.
Yeah, no kidding.
Welcome. Who wants to start?
You were first in the night. Yeah. All right. My name is Fred Walton. I'm a resident of Southwest Portland, and I want to begin by thanking you for taking the time to allow us to come before you. I'm sure you have what you consider to be, and which possibly are, much more pressing issues facing you in this session, but I don't think you have any that are more fundamental or of more long-lasting consequence than this issue of having every vote counted. All right.
We go in and out at this time.
I gotcha. I understand why this has become or is viewed by a lot of people as a partisan issue. although it really isn't, as the position of your current Senate President, Peter Courtney, is having taken the other side, it's clearly not partisan where he's concerned. And I just want to say it shouldn't be a partisan issue. The tide could turn very quickly, even though, you know, two of the last three candidates to enter the White House won without having gained the popular vote. Over the course of, say, the last, since 1932,
I have time to submit written testimony.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you used part of the time while they were talking. You used part of your time when they were talking because you waited for them.
Yeah. Well, I, okay.
Welcome.
Hi. I'm Ken Corum, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this issue today. I was under the impression we had 3 minutes, and I ran through this probably a dozen times trying to get it down to 3 minutes. So this is going to be a disaster. I have submitted written comments, and I hope you'll take the time. It's less than a page and a half. I think I make my points a lot better than I'm going to make them now. But I'm in favor of House Bill 2927, and I really would oppose Senate Bill 825, just to put the conclusion first. I, like the others here, am motivated by a primary principle that all votes should count equally across the country, and that the current winner-take-all allocation of electoral votes doesn't accomplish that. And I think the national popular vote interstate compact would accomplish that with great benefits. If you think that all votes are the same now, the evidence that we've already heard cited several times, two elections out of the last five have been won by people who have less popular vote than their opponents. We wouldn't accept that in a high school senior class presidency election. This isn't the kind of outcome we want for the President of the United States. It's legal, but that's what we're trying to improve on. Okay. And as far as the choice between 2927 and 825, I can't imagine any outcome rather more than a food fight with buckets of money coming in from outside the states and a lot of distortion of the issues. I don't want that. It's too important. The legislature has the authority and the responsibility to deal with this. And I have to tell you, if the legislature doesn't deal with it, they aren't doing their job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Sorry. It's okay.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Donnelly. I live in Northeast Portland. I am a strong supporter of House Bill 2927. I do not support Senate Bill 825. Some have said that this is counterintuitive or ironic to not support a national vote, to go to the people for a vote, but it is neither of these things. Senate Bill 825 is just another way to kill national popular vote in Oregon. I have submitted written testimony, so I will not go into all the reasons I feel why this is, and some of those have already been said. I do want to address Senator Farioli's concern, too bad he's not here, about the population issue that he brought up. The population of the 50 biggest cities in America is only 15% of the American population. 85% of the American population live in places with a population less than 360,000 people. Los Angeles, California was brought up earlier. Four recent Republican governors were elected in California by not carrying Los Angeles. They didn't win Los Angeles, which I think disproves Senator Farioli's issue. California, New York, and Texas are our most populous states. But even if a candidate, quite unrealistically, won every single vote cast in those states, he or she would still have barely 25% of the votes. Indeed, a candidate could win every single vote cast in the 10 biggest states and still not have a majority of the national popular vote. I know there are many important issues that the legislature is dealing with this year, and MPV might seem minor, but it's not. We have a nation of have and have not, swing states and spectator states. Our voter turnout is some of the lowest in the world, higher in swing states, interestingly. And we have an electoral system that awards the presidency to someone who doesn't have to win the popular vote. In Oregon, we are one of those have nots, a spectator state that's repeatedly ignored. It's time that we are at the forefront once again, as we were with the 17th Amendment and vote by mail. This decision is in your hands. You have the chance to ignite the nation onto the path of electoral reform. Please vote yes on House Bill 2927.
Thank you very much. Question, Senator Robles. Thank you.
I have no questions. They're good.
Okay. All right. Just for the audience, we're in the last couple, 3 weeks of the session, and people are being, we're missing two members because they're negotiating the transportation plan. And Senator Farioli is the Republican leader, so he has a lot of responsibilities too. So, but this will all be on the record. Okay. Eileen Reavy, Lynn Thompson, and Rebecca Roth.
My name is Rebecca Roth, and I'm here to oppose both the all the change that both bills. And already Oregon experiences a popular vote that is a finished popular vote, and we do that as a sovereign state. And I have never felt disenfranchised, even though my vote is usually not recognized because it's the Democrats that control and have usually been the ones who the delegates are chosen by to represent us in the Electoral College. But I get to cast my vote, and even though I'm overwhelmed by Democrats, we're not disenfranchised. The system that we have, which awards all the delegates to one party, is that could be tweaked, but to go to the national popular vote, where Oregon would be part of a pool where we can't control the election from Oregon, to me is a big detriment. In Oregon, we are in control of our own election. We may have problems. We have things that go on here that shouldn't go on, but we're the ones that control it. To give up that so that we're in a large pool of Americans all across America, where we have other people will be doing their own thing and we can't control it. So the promises that are being made, we don't have any proof that they're actually going to deliver on the promises. They keep stressing that you have the right to decide how we go, and I don't know why that's such an important thing to them, but for some reason they really want you involved in this. And I think that the system is a good system. It's a brilliant idea, and what I would like to see us do here in Oregon is educate our young people. I was talking to one young person, and they said that they went to a debate, and in the debate they said that they couldn't think of any reasons to support the Electoral College. And I said to that young person, that wasn't a debate. You didn't have the ideas on both sides put before you.
Need so, to wrap it up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Lynn Thompson. I've been for reforming the Electoral College since I moved to Oregon from Texas. Many people I talk to in both states don't vote for the presidential elections because they believe the outcome is a foregone conclusion in their very red or very blue state. Others trade votes with people in other states who pledge to vote for a Democrat or a Republican if they will vote for a third-party candidate. Others write in protest votes. I do not think this is what our forefathers had in mind when they conceived of the original usage of the Electoral College. Many people think Hillary Clinton would have won last election if we had MPV. I say we do not know. If people were not, did not feel disenfranchised by the Electoral College, we have no idea how many people would have voted and how they would have voted. Furthermore, as someone who works at the polls every 4 years, I can tell you that 90 to 95% of the people I call do not know anything about down-ticket candidates. Those that plan to vote stay on the phone long enough for me to tell them a little about other candidates. I think that everyone in this room can agree that we want a more involved electorate. On behalf of the thousands of people you have heard from this session, please provide a pathway for our votes to count in what is conceivably the most important election in this country. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I have you down as for House Bill 2927 and against Senate Bill 825. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Welcome.
Hello. Eileen Ravy from Southeast Portland. I want to thank Chair Burdick, Senator Farioli, and Senator Roblin for finally helping us break the stalemate on this issue in Oregon after 8 years of people trying to get this heard by the Senate Rules Committee. So thank you. I think it's a really great example of how government is constantly evolving. I do strongly support 2927 and not Senate Bill 825. And I think that the president should represent all people within the United States, regardless of the state that they vote in. Before this election, I was a voting member of Pennsylvania, and it seems quite ridiculous to me that my vote would have been much more consequential if I had voted in that primary, or excuse me, in the general election there rather than here in Oregon. People are expressing their voices here for this and have been all session through emails, calls, tweets, Facebook messages, and much more, I'm sure. While I absolutely support people's decisions and ability to have their vote count as much as possible, this issue specifically was granted to the legislature by the forefathers in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2. Speaking of the forefathers, I think it would be interesting for you to learn that they never wanted to decide how presidential electors were voting in the Electoral College. We are continuing the history and the precedent of the Electoral College, but just simply changing how Oregon's electoral votes are cast in it. Interestingly, it wasn't until the 10th election of the United States for president that winner-take-all was the system that was most popular state by state. It's completely within the state's hands. We are advocating for one person, one vote, no matter what. Geography not dictating weight. And I'd also like to point out that this movement has been caused with a lot of grassroots support. I know that some of your colleagues think that this is a well-funded political operation. I assure you it is not. Everyone in this room is a grassroots supporter chipping in $5, $20 at a time to buy T-shirts and take the time down here to come down here. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
I have a question about the incongruity of not wanting to support a referral to the people so we could ask all Oregonians, because we want their votes to count, mm-hmm. as opposed to supporting 2927, which would make it a vote of 90 people as opposed to 4 million. So if our advocacy is to make all people's votes count equally, why wouldn't you be strong advocates for the referral on this issue?
Very good point.
Because I just finished my first year at Lewis and Clark Law School, and I'm a strong believer in the Constitution, which very specifically gives the duty to make this decision to you. And I assure you, I've done everything in my power to make this issue as public as possible over the last 6 months. And I think that you've heard from several thousand people across the state making their voices heard. And I agree that it's not something you can't refer every single issue to the people. And the Constitution gave you explicitly this authority.
Okay. Thank you.
Could I comment on that, too?
Briefly.
I think that's why we have representational government. Since I've moved here in 2004, I hear all the time that we overdo referendums in this state, that, you know, we saw in 97 and when the GMO labeling, that all this out-of-state money came in, and a lot of the ads that were on television were not accurate. We want this to be based on what is right, not who has the most money and who can tell the most lies. And that's why we elect you, to listen to the electorate and then do the research and make the right vote.
May I make a comment?
No, we're done.
That was a very good question. It needs further examination.
Thank you. Okay. Next panel will be Ann Taliaferro, Linda Gales Merlin, and Garrett Rosenthal.
She'll say her name, so.
I'm being told I badly mispronounced
No,
her
I didn't
name.
Say it. It's amazing.
It's okay.
But we'll know in a sec.
We'll know in a minute. Okay, welcome.
Hello.
Start on that.
Okay. Senator Burdick and members of the committee, thank you for holding this hearing and allowing the voices of the people to be heard on this issue. My name is Ann Tolliver.
Danger.
I live in Petey, Oregon, and I am a constituent of Senator Boquist. There are many reasons that I support the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact. Briefly, I'd like to highlight one or two. As you know, and we've talked about already, a healthy democracy depends on citizen participation, and voter participation is dismally low in our country. Excuse me. My 25-year-old son finally convinced some of his friends to vote this past year. They were disillusioned when they found that their votes didn't count. In this election, that was the case no matter which way they voted. Had they voted for Donald Trump, their votes didn't count because all of Oregon's electoral votes went to Hillary Clinton. Had they voted for Clinton, their votes didn't count because of the results of the Electoral College. Senator Farioli showed us a map that we're all very familiar with. Oregonians don't vote 100% for one candidate, despite the fact that our state shows up as bright blue. This is true across the country. If you're concerned that a few states will be able to determine the outcome of the election, you should vote yes on House Bill 2927. Whether you're pleased or upset by the results of the last election does not matter. We have battleground states for years, but with the technology that's now available, campaigns can simply target a few precincts in those states, thereby gaming the system. I wanted to talk about why I don't support a referral, but I'm out of time, so please read my testimony. It's only one page.
Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you very much for holding this hearing. We all appreciate it very, very much. I thought I would like to distill this
issue. Put your name on the record,
please. Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Linda Gallus Merton. I thought I would like to distill this issue through the lens of Dr. Seuss. Your vote, my vote, black vote, white vote, old vote, new vote. Each vote must be equal. States are not co-equal. Wow, what a lot of votes there are. Yes, some are red, some are blue, some are old, and some are new. Some are rich, and some are poor. Isn't that what democracy's for? Why are presidents the only ones why are presidents the only ones we elect by states? Ugh, pass the Tums. All we want is an evolution, not a change in the Constitution. Which bill, you ask, should you support? We know which one you should abort. 825 is bad all round. It breaks the law. It is not sound. Psst! You may not want to see this through, but Article 2 says it's you. 2927, it's a beauty. Please vote yes and do your duty. You're You have a chance to do this right, to give Oregon a plebiscite. One person, one vote. Now there is something you can quote. Thank you.
And thank you. I think with unanimous consent, I think you get the prize for the best testimony.
Chair Burdick, Vice Chair, Senator Farioli, that's a hard act to follow. But I will be brief, and since I don't have my glasses, this will not be verbatim. I have submitted testimony. Oh, that's better. I have four quick points. Oh, great.
Your
this
name,
is stronger
please.
Than mine.
Start
the Electoral College.
Start with your name, please.
Garrett Rosenthal from Tualatin, Oregon. The Electoral College is an anachronism dating from a period when there were only 13 states, difficult travel, sparse communication networks, and a vote that was very limited in enfranchisement. There were a whole bunch of people that couldn't vote. So to say that we haven't changed since then is just simply not the case. I have not heard a positive, logical reason by anybody as to why we should condone or continue a presidential election system that is demonstrably undemocratic and by which a small cadre of states can elect a president against the general will of the people. There is no constitutional support for the fact that a voter in low population state has 3.3 times the voting power of a voter in a populous state. Right now, states with large population get dominated by smaller states or by eastern states because it's a matter of timing. There's two ways to change it. One is by the NPVIC or by a full constitutional convention, and I think none of us really want to go to a full constitutional convention. And finally, the Constitution, and you've heard this point, clearly intended the legislature to be the agents of making this decision. And the reason for doing this way by this legislature is that if there were a popular vote or if a vote by the people in Oregon, it would be only advisory. It really would not have the standard of law, and the legislature would come back to the legislature again. And so it would just delay things, it would cost a lot of money, and it wouldn't be productive. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair, the oath I took was to uphold the Constitution, which contains the provisions for electing the president and vice president. Also contained in the Constitution is the right of the people to change their government when they wish to. But that seems to me to mitigate for a referral and not a legislative enactment.
Have you read Article 2, Senator?
I got it on my screen.
What does it say?
Well, it says that it has replaced... That Article 2 was replaced by a provision to creating the Electoral College, according to my little Google thing here.
No.
What does it say?
It says that you, the legislature and legislators in every single state, choose the manner in which electors are chosen and how they vote.
So a representative form of government is the one you favor.
The representative form of government is given to all of us to elect you.
Yes. And the Electoral College is a representative form of government.
The president should represent all of us.
Well, this is a colloquy, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we will have Sarah Bly, Will Hobbs, and Bill Harnes.
Our third member is missing.
Oh, well.
I don't think that gives us more time, though, does it?
No, it doesn't. Otherwise, we'll have a riot from
what was
people
the, what
who
was
can't
the other
speak.
Name? What were the three names?
His name was Bill's last name.
Will Hobbs.
Oh, that's me. I'm here.
Will Hobbs, Sarah Bly, and who was the other one I had? I'm sorry, I'm going from three lists here. Bill Harris. Bill Harris.
Bingo.
Sorry about that. I'm not very good at reading handwriting. But you had time to collect your thoughts. It's not totally wasted.
Tell me to start.
Sure.
Welcome.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Sarah Bly, and I reside in Senator Betsy Johnson's district. Thank you for the work you do for us and for the hearing today. As Eileen said, it's monumental for us. I support HB 2927, and I do not support SB 825. As Linda said so well, your vote, my vote, red vote, blue vote. HB 2927 will give each person a vote that counts in electing the President of the United States. Despite Senator Steiner Hayward's positive comments earlier today, with which I do agree, I do know there's also been concern that if a candidate wins the popular vote nationally but does not win the popular vote in Oregon, it might be problematic for Oregon electors to go against the majority of the Oregon voters. But that that argument assumes that state representation is significant. In the presidential election, it is each individual person's vote that counts, every vote in every state. The popular vote nationwide determines the election, and the Electoral College simply acts on that result. There's no reason to look at state-by-state results. Linda went on to say, "All we want is an evolution, not a change in the Constitution." The Electoral College has already gone through major changes in past years with no change to our Constitution. The current winner-take-all allocation of electors that now exists in most states doesn't serve us well. A large number of voters are disenfranchised. This is not the democracy we want. I do not support SB 825 because the Constitution specifically assigns the job of choosing the method of awarding elector votes to the state legislature. SB 825 is unnecessary. Thank you. Oregon should be among the leaders, not just another state.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hi. Will Hobbs from rural Washington County, Senator Burdick, and members of the committee. I don't want to repeat what a lot of other people have said, so you have my presentation. I'd like to have you go through it at your leisure. Two of the last five elections were won by a popular vote loser, and that could happen to either party. One thing that hasn't been stressed enough is the votes, votes don't carry the same weight from state to state. A vote in it takes 3.2 times as many votes in California to elect an elector as it does in Wyoming. In general, the power of your vote is inversely proportional to the population of the state. That makes all votes unequal. Mm-hmm. The Electoral College creates swing states, which are identified years in advance, and that gives plenty of time for people to focus their voter suppression, their hacking, their dark money, etc. And it also creates a very chaotic situation, which a very small event can swing the election for the entire country. What I'd want to focus on, though, is approximately half of all votes are wasted. When people say, my vote doesn't count, that's true about 50% of the time. In a case where the vote is determined by a plurality, even more than half of the votes are wasted. But if you look at, for example, in Oregon, slightly more than half of the votes went to Clinton. Anything more than half plus one are wasted votes. Those don't count towards the result. Trump's votes, Johnson's votes, Stein's votes don't count at all towards any vote whatsoever. The votes stop at the border. They don't go anywhere. And that likely depresses turnout. I mean, if people don't think that their vote counts anyway, why bother voting? And this is a bipartisan issue. National popular vote, all votes count, and all votes count equally.
Thank you.
Chairman Burdick and committee members, I'm Bill Harris. I live at 2803 Northwest Cumberland Road in Portland. Genuinely empowering citizens is really important. The problem we face these days are really big. The need for quality of citizenship has, I'm very much impressed, never been any greater. Now, the national popular vote will encourage campaigns which consider the issues homogeneously in all states of the country. It will help clarify our decision-making by blunting the effect of the winner-take-all practice of the Electoral College. Please do not refer this issue for a statewide vote, but pass it to the Senate with a due pass suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay, next we will take Andrew Nesbitt, Janice Deisinger, and John Woods.
I'm going to agree with them, so I want them to go first, and then I'll go make my point.
Fair enough. My name is Andrew Nesbitt. I'm from Portland. I'm opposed to both bills. I wasn't going to bring up this point, but it's been brought up so many times and is so wrong that I feel compelled. The fact of the matter is that counting cities doesn't matter. Counting urban areas is what matters. And the 50 top urban areas in the country include more than half of the population. So blathering about cities isn't, in fact, an attempt to address the problem. We could make every Oregonian's vote count without waiting for a compact to be signed, without having a constitutional amendment. We could do that by simply adopting proportional, fractional electoral voting. This is clearly allowed by the Constitution, which distributes electors in whole numbers and instructs them to be counted in numbers. For those of you who forget first grade or second grade math, I know I did, a whole number does not include fractions. A number does. The reason, however, that we aren't going to do that is that winner take all favors the parties in power. And when genuine power becomes an issue, T-shirt platitudes are going to go to the wall. I have a number of complete technical flaws, which I believe would lead to a major disaster if this should be indicated. And I hope you have time to take a look at my written testimony, which has been put into the record.
Thank you so much. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Janice Deisinger, and I always get nervous up here, so I hope you'll bear with me. I'm from Gresham, Oregon, and I want to say that I am opposed to both bills. I'm completely and absolutely opposed to 2927, and if you are determined to go forward with it, I would appreciate you bringing it before the public in a vote, as Senator Farioli recommended, because that shows the will of the people more. I believe this is unconstitutional, although I know they say it's a myth that it's unconstitutional. I don't like my statements being coined as a myth when I feel they're very important. The Constitution has a process where we can amend it if we want to change it, but right now we have agreed upon how we're to elect our president through the Electoral College, and this process violates the Compact Clause, and I believe it also violates the equal footing for the states, and we need to recognize that the election is by the states, because our as that map showed, there's a lot of different regions, and they're very unique areas, and if you don't like the way things are in one state, you could go to another state. They're sovereign. And that's what is recognized by the Electoral College, is the sovereignty of the states. One of the other problems, since I'm an election advocate and have been for some time. The problem with the national popular vote is it allows cheating in one area to affect a vote in a state somewhere else, and there is no control by that state over what happened in the other in the state that had cheating in it. So its representation there is flawed.
Thank you. Welcome.
Senator Burdick, Senator Farioli. My name is John Woods. I came here with a request. And my request is, could we stop this silliness? Honest to God, I came from New York. And we watched New York City run over the rest of the state. A big city cannot help themselves to literally run over the rest of the state. Portland runs over the rest of the state here. I hear people out in rural Oregon openly talking about secession and breaking the state up. So why don't we start looking at Oregon and take care of the problems? Article 1, Section 10.3 of the Constitution says that no state without the consent of Congress will enter into any agreement or compact with another state. Now, we just had Gorsuch, who's a strict constitutionalist, get onto the Supreme Court. Ginsburg will retire at some point in time, probably won't last out the 4 years of Trump. So therefore, we're going to have two strict constitutionalists on the court. We're going to have the majority. This is basically checkmate, game over. I don't care what you do with this compact or whatever. They're not going to vote for it, and they're not going to let it go, and the Supreme Court is going to kill it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee? Thank you. Okay. Next, we will take Kendra Gelson, okay. Joyce Judy, and Kate Titus.
Carried over
825 and 29. Okay. So we
still have to just wait. Okay.
Okay. Are you ready?
Who wants to start?
I'll start. I'm Pender Gilson from Salem. Thank you so much for this opportunity. The most important point I just want to emphasize is the fact that every citizen in America needs to feel that they can and will can participate and it will count. There's a point in high school civics class where people to some degree disengage from politics, and that point is when one finds out that, nope, you don't really choose the president, that, nope, your vote really doesn't count. Twice in recent memory, we the people have chosen a president who did not hold the office for which the majority of people voted. The message this sends to our citizens tells them, your vote doesn't count. Why should you even bother to vote if you're the candidate that's chosen can't win? It sends the message loud and clear, not going to bother. By passing HB 2927, it will send a more appropriate message, a message of full participation. It will declare that, yes, your vote counts. Yes, the promise of one person, one vote will be honored, that one of the concepts our forefathers set forth in order to establish a government of the people, by the people, and for the people is working. Please support HB 2927. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Joyce Judy, and I am in Senator Courtney's district. And first, I'd like to thank Senator Burdick for bringing forward the national popular vote for a public hearing in the Senate. It's been a very long time coming. I am in favor of House Bill 2927 without referral and against Senate Bill 825. The Constitution does provide that it is the legislature's responsibility for deciding how electors pass their votes. for our legislature to do otherwise would be to abrogate your responsibility, not only to your constituents, but also to the Constitution. There is not a state in the nation whose legislature does not make the decisions regarding how their electoral votes are cast, not now, not ever in our history. I also wanted to tell you about the national popular vote does not violate the compact clause. The MPV compact does not need approval of Congress because it doesn't encroach on federal sovereignty. This is an interpretation of the compact clause supported by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1983, 1976, and finally in 1978 with the case of U.S. Steel Corporation versus Multi-State Tax Commission. Absent a threat of encroachment or interference through enhanced state power, the existence of a federal interest is irrelevant. Indeed, every state cooperative action touching interstate or foreign commerce implicates some federal interest. Were that the test under the Compact Clause, virtually all interstate agreements and reciprocal legislation would require congressional approval. This bill doesn't change the Constitution. It doesn't get rid of the Electoral College. It doesn't disenchant and disenfranchise voters. Please vote for HB 2927. Thank you.
Welcome. Hello, Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. Thank you for taking this testimony. My name's Kate Titus, and I'm here representing Common Cause Oregon, which is an organization that works for open and accountable government. And I'd like to just start by thanking Senator Boquist for your leadership on this issue and also on democracy issues in general. I'd also like to thank Senator Burdick for scheduling this hearing. As one of the other people testifying said, it's a long time coming. And many of you know that Common Cause, along with the League of Women Voters and some other organizations, have been working for nearly a decade to pass this. Some may feel that in light of the recent election that this is a new issue or it has something very specific to do with this recent election, but the fact that we've been trying to pass this well before the election for nearly a decade, I think, is a testament to the fact that this is really a much deeper, more fundamental issue in our democracy. The election, however, has had an impact on this issue, and the most profound impact is that it makes it there's a lot more public attention to this issue right now. There's a spotlight on the issue because we've just had an election that wasn't decided by the national popular vote. It's also cast a somewhat partisan tinge to it, which I think is unfortunate because this is not a partisan issue. It will benefit both Democrats and Republicans, I believe, in this state. But for some who are virulently opposed to the current president, the fact that he was elected not by the popular vote makes this all the more an issue to support right now. And for some who support the current president, it's a reason maybe to back off from supporting national popular vote. But I would suggest that I think the vast majority of people in this state right now are just appalled that anyone could be elected president without the national popular vote. It just doesn't seem right in a democracy, and that's why I think it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. At this time, I'm going to recess the public hearing briefly and so that we can complete a necessary bill that we have to work on. So I will close the recess the public hearing on House Bill 2927 and Senate Bill 825 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1008.
Weeks. Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 1008 directs the Department of Environmental Quality to hire a contract with a third party to complete an inventory of non-road diesel engines no later than July 1st, 2019. There was a public hearing held on this measure in Senate Rules on May 17th. There are two amendments being offered today. The First Amendment, the Dash 4s, extend the January 1st, 27 sunset on school bus retrofits to January 1st, 2025, and require the State Board of Education and
just do the Dash 8.
Sure. Madam Chair, the Dash 8 amendments provide standards for rules adopted by the Environmental Quality Commission for qualifying diesel engine replacements, retrofit, or repowers, and additionally, the amendments extend the sunset on school bus retrofits to January 1st, 2025, and provide requirements for retrofitting of diesel engine school buses. Lastly, the Dash 8 amendments include an emergency clause. We do have the revenue and fiscal light paperwork
for
the Dash 8 amendments.
Okay. All right. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 1008A.
Senator Farioli has moved the Dash 8 amendments to Senate Bill 1008. Is there any discussion?
Only the staff better be ready for Senator Johnson's question on the emergency clause.
Any objection? So ordered. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1008 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
No.
Oops. Oh, we're going to.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I move that Senate Bill 1008 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Senator Farioli has moved Senate Bill 1008 is amended to the floor with the do pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, some discussion.
Senator Robles.
I just want to make clear, because I have talked to a number of people about this, that there is a portion of the bill that does talk to about rulemaking by DEQ. That rulemaking is about the previous bills we've passed on clean air and not on any of the new requirements. All of the things that we would do with respect to clean air in the future need to come back to the legislature, and this really just takes care of the using the Volkswagen money to retrofit and fix school buses.
Thank you.
I appreciate that.
For that elaboration. Senator Boquist.
I'm associated with his comments.
Okay. For the record. Okay. The record. Is there any other discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you. We will close the work session on Senate Bill 1008 and reopen the hearing on House Bill 2927 and Senate Bill 825. Okay, our next panel, thank you, audience, for your patience. Our next panel will be Dane Piccola, John Gear, maybe? Possibly? And Tim Cowan.
It's coming to me again.
Yeah. It'll be back and forth, too.
Are you John Gear?
I am, ma'am.
Oh, good. Welcome.
Thank you. I'll take that to go first. Senator Burdick, Senator Farioli, members of the committee, thank you very much for having this hearing. I live in Peter Courtney's district.
Could
and
you
I am
put
so,
your name on the record even though I said it? Thanks.
It is still John Gear, and I live in Peter Courtney's district, and I am so glad that we are having this hearing after many years. I moved to Oregon in 2007 and sent my first letter to the senator not long after that on this issue. I did because I'm a veteran, and I've lived in many places all over the country. And with the deaths of the seven members of the Fitzgerald recently, mostly immigrants or descendants of immigrants who all served in the same Navy and who are members of states from New York to California, I believe strongly that every American's vote should count the same for electing our sole national office. And I believe that the Electoral College is a pathological, deterministic system for rectifying slavery. The reason we have the Electoral College and the whole reason for the Great Compromise at the Constitutional Convention was to protect the rights of slaveholders and to oppress enslaved peoples. And we should eliminate that legacy. And since we cannot eliminate the Electoral College under the constitutional amendment route, given the hold of the favored states, which are overwhelmingly the states that are majority, overwhelmingly white, the Electoral College today continues to discriminate against persons of color and minorities. And we should make sure that we are one nation under God by saying that every member of the country with a vote casts an equal vote for president, our sole national office. We should not refer this to the voters, because that is precisely when it will become a partisan nightmare. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is Diane Piccola here? That was our third panelist. Okay, go ahead. Oh, Dane Piccola. Why don't you go ahead and get started?
Chair and committee members, for the record, my name is Tim Cowan. This is going to be somewhat difficult because of all the notes I've taken from my testimony. Right now, by Gallup's calculation, over 50% of the voters, or 50% of the people eligible and registered, don't vote. I haven't voted for president in almost 40 years. What I've done is I've voted for a candidate that I thought would cause the least amount of damage out of two candidates I didn't want. And I think that could have an influence in the voting. First of all, in Oregon, we have about one-third more value in our vote than in other states. Now, why do we have that? We have it because we're smaller, and it gives us the ability to have an impact in federal government. The Electoral College helps with federal government, or the federal type of government, by having federal, state, and local authorities. To the bill, I'll do this real quick. Any member can withdraw within this agreement except after 6 months. Well, why is this part of the agreement? Does it eliminate a candidate that is increasing in popularity and not acceptable? I'm sorry, I've got so many notes written down.
Remember, you can put things on the record in the written record.
Thank you.
Why don't we go on to you?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Ferrioli, and members of the committee. My name is Dane Piccola. I am from District 18 in Portland. This committee has already heard plenty of testimony for and against the NPV. There would be little, if any, new information I could add at this time. Instead, I would like to remind the committee that just a few years ago, an Oregon poll was taken that showed 76% support from Oregon citizens for the NPV. That was 6% above the national average. The Oregon legislature is empowered to enact laws in the interests of its citizens. Surely, voting for fairness is one of these interests. Therefore, I'm asking this committee to allow HB 2927 to come to the floor of the Senate for an up or down vote without amendments. If the voters of Oregon find they do not like this new law, allowing every individual vote to count in the national election, there are means for repealing it. And yet, of the 10 states and one district who have already signed this compact, none have chosen to do so. I believe Oregon will follow suit. Oregon is famous as a bright blue state, a progressive leader in so many areas, and I am grateful for it. However, are all our citizen voices in Oregon being heard during a national election? Or do we sometimes feel we might as well have thrown our ballots into the trash? And we are right in feeling this way. We are not a swing state. We are not listened to by those running for president. We are hardly even visited by them. With the present system, Oregon's 7 electoral votes do not matter. They are counted, but they don't count. Passing the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact into law across this country and change that. Let us join our two sister states and form a West Coast alliance against all the voting problems we have in our divided countries today. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. Okay, next we'll have Jane Ewert, Les Poole, and Paula Grisafi, maybe. Missing one, but go ahead.
You can go ahead, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. My name is Paula Grisafi. I speak in opposition for Senate Bill 825 and in support of HB 2927. The U.S. Constitution requires that the state legislature determine disposition of electoral votes in a state, not a referendum. This could make such a referral a poison pill that would doom the bill to be challenged as unconstitutionally decided. This should be an easy decision. A 2008 poll showed that 76% of Oregonians were in favor of the national popular vote. Democracy is not the vote of one person in one state having 40 times the influence of vote of a person in another. It is not negating the vote of a person in a national election in a state because the majority of those voting in that state vote another way. I was brought up to believe in democracy, and I was taught its importance and its power in civil class, in civics class, and I never doubted it was what this country stood for until recent years. A senator here asked me if I was willing to take the consequences of the NPV passing if in future my candidate lost. My answer was, if everyone's vote counted, yes, because that's democracy. I lived for 26 years in a small town in Massachusetts where we had governance by annual open town meeting. I cannot tell you what a time-consuming, messy, and profound experience that was for me. It gave me the confidence in the American people and a strong belief in democracy, what was by far the best form of government. The NPV protects that democracy by protecting everyone's right to have their voice heard and to have the voice count equally. That decision should not be bartered away. You have the power in one case to stand up for your constituents over the voice of some of your national party leaders and to stand up for your constituents over your party spent president in the other. Please do the right thing and vote for HB 2927, not SB 825.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, committee. Les Poole. I live in Clackamas County. I've heard a lot of things today, so have you. And one of them is that there seems to be a lot of focus on a desire to change how our electoral votes are allotted. I suggest to everyone that's using that as a reason to support this bill, focus their direction, their attention in that direction. The winner-take-all issue is far different from what we're seeing here. And while some have worked on this for 10 years, I don't know how long this version's been out, but I'm very troubled by the interpretation of the Constitution and frankly by the legal arguments that are being made by folks that probably aren't qualified. So I'm not going to get up here and make legal arguments, but I will certainly reassure everyone in this room that the grounds for this, national popular vote versus this bill, 2927, there's a big disconnect from how do we get to a national popular vote and whether or not this bill is the right avenue. And I don't see that. I see this tied up in court. I see this as a major change to the Constitution. And I see the various interpretations of what the Founding Fathers meant when they created the college. One of the things that they strongly considered was the fact that back in those days the agrarian population exceeded the cities and the college would protect city voters. So I don't see how rural Oregon or small Oregon wins in this equation. The math doesn't seem to work. And I'll close by saying that It's almost ludicrous. Hopefully I don't offend anyone here, but if I do, I apologize. It is ludicrous to propose a national popular vote here in Oregon and then turn around and say SB 825 should not be approved. 825 certainly is about a popular vote, and you have the power to refer this out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? All right. Okay, our last panel will be give Jane Ewart another chance to come forward, and Linda Merton. Okay, is there anybody else who would like to testify? Okay.
I put my name on the list, Madam Chair.
Well, pardon?
Jim Gilbert?
Yeah, I'm not seeing you here, Jim. I know you, and I'm not seeing you here. But you come on up.
There's one in the back, too. I'm not sure.
There's another woman in the, or somebody in the back corner.
Margaret Bengry. I thought that my name was on the list.
Well, come on up. I've got like five forms here. I might have dropped one. So we'll just make sure everyone who wants to talk gets a chance.
Great. Well, Madam Chair, Co-Chair Farioli, and members of the committee, thank you very much for having this meeting. My name is Jim Gilbert. I'm a farmer and nursery owner in South Clackamas County. And again, very happy to be here and finally to talk with you. I don't like the Electoral College. I find it to be an archaic and really undemocratic method of electing a national leader. And I'm always thinking about it's been mentioned many times about the principle of one person and one vote. And I'd like those people who are in support of the Electoral College to actually argue in favor of why one person's vote should count less than another person's vote. I don't really believe that's the basis of our democracy, and every other democracy in the world has managed to function pretty well with a popular vote system. So I think we could probably do the same thing. I think it's important to think of citizens, not states, in this regard, because our president is elected to represent all the people of the United States. I think the states, we need to remind ourselves that states already have disproportionate power in the U.S. Senate. So say a state like Wyoming has two senators with 400,000 people, and California has two senators with 37 million people. And also, as the previous testimony indicated, the history of the Electoral College is not particularly rosy. It really goes back to trying to appease slaveholding states 200-some-plus years ago and trying to make them stay, keep them in the Union. So I strongly urge you to support House Bill 2927, and I oppose Senate Bill 825. And just a real brief personal note, it does matter who you elect. And at this moment in time, Oregon agriculture, the nursery industry, and my farm is being threatened by some pretty anti-immigrant policies that would not be in happening, probably, if we had elected the person who won the popular vote. And in addition, if that were to have happened, I probably could have had to swallow that bitter pill if I knew the person was elected by all the citizens of the U.S. But since it wasn't, it's more difficult. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome. I did find you signed up for the wrong bill, Jim.
Oh, sorry.
But that's okay. We forgive you. Welcome.
My name is Margaret Bengry, Senator Burdick, Senator Farioli. Thank you for having us. I'm a farmer in Yamhill County. I'm here on a beautiful sunny day in June, neglecting my hazelnut orchard, because I think that passing HB 2927 is, in the long run, the most important thing that this legislature can do in this session. I want particularly to thank our own Yamhill Senator, Senator Brian Boquist, for his support of this bill. All political parties should applaud national popular vote. It's completely consistent with the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution permits states to allocate electoral votes as they see fit. Oregonians have faith in the basic tenet of democracy that the majority should rule. So we should allocate our votes to ensure that the majority rules. I urge you to support HB 2927 and not SB 825. so that I do not have to further neglect my orchard to support a lengthy referendum. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And you were signed up, and it looked like it was crossed out, but sometimes the carbon paper bleeds over. So thank you very much. Questions from the committee? All right. Thank you.
It's great to have two farmers up here.
Actually, that ended pretty well. Okay. Is there anybody else who wanted to speak on this before we adjourn? Okay, thank you all for coming, and really appreciate your comments. And remember, the record is open until Friday at 5 o'clock. And with that, we...
Back into our other work session.
Which one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, we have another work session, folks, so I will close the public hearings on 2927, House Bill 2927 and Senate Bill 825, and open a work session on, we're not doing that today. We'll be doing it.
You and I have to talk about that.
We'll open a work session. Let's wait till they...
Oh, yeah. 10:13. No.
Okay, we will open a work session now on House Bill 2873. Cherie.
Madam Chair and members, House Bill 2873 requires the governing body of the county, city, port school district, union high school district, community college district, or any other public corporation that places a local tax option measure or a general obligation bond measure on the ballot to submit information to the county elections officer and that the information be published on ORSTAR. We have fiscal paperwork indicating a minimal impact and revenue paperwork indicating no impact associated with this measure.
Okay, Senator Farioli, we don't have an amendment on this. Okay, Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2873A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 2873 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Roblin, would you like to carry this?
I have to.
All right. Thank you, and thanks for reminding me that we almost forgot this. Thank you, committee. With that, we are... With that, we are... Me that we almost forgot this. Thank you, committee.